much you want to bet?
I don't bet.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1.
You're on.
Oh, it's that time of the week again, the Thirsty Thursday edition of the Bet the Board podcast, the one where we'll give you all the nuggets leading into Sunday's biggest games. Be joined in just a matter of seconds by Payne Insider, who you can follow on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. See my work, toddstake.com. Follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. And Payne, I know the highlight of this pod is going to be the Tennessee-Jacksonville game that we will get to at the very end, but are you going to be able to contain your excitement breaking down the matchup between Blake Bortles and Charlie Whitehurst?
Huge, huge contest, almost like watching you and me, two short white guys in a dunk contest tonight. That's the equivalent of what we have on tap for Thursday Night Football.
I might need all the help I can get, even if we were to have that dunk contest on an 8-foot basket. But of course, plenty of money to be made, and hopefully we can uncover an angle. As we do every Thursday, we will get to that at the end of the pod. Like to thank everyone in advance for all the great questions you guys submitted this week using the hashtag AskBetTheBoard. But Payne, like we always do, we're not going to highlight every game this particular week, but let's start with some of the marquee matchups. And we have two games on Saturday, one maybe with some playoff implications, so to speak, one a lame duck coach, some interesting elements in play. And we'll start with the game of the night, San Diego, a one-point dog now against San Francisco. We've seen money on the underdog and on the under, and San Francisco may be inclined to mail it in, now mathematically eliminated from the postseason.
Yeah, not a real shock here, as we alluded to on the Monday podcast as to where this line was going. We said hop on San Diego. My feeling is this probably continues to the other direction. Would not be shocked to see San Diego close a small favorite here. A lot of interesting things going on within the organization of San Francisco, really all season long, but now you basically cut ties with McDonald. Harbaugh seems like the foot is completely out the door at this stage. A lot of talk of resting guys. I know for your purposes you're pretty interested in Carlos Hyde going this week, but everything appears that he is going to be out. I know Frank Gore says he feels like $1 million post-concussion. We'll see if he gets upgraded there. But it's San Diego or nothing, and at this stage, you know, before it crosses the zero, San Diego's probably a nice teaser leg getting them above the 7.
I would definitely agree there. And as you mentioned, I think Frank Gore, for those fantasy players still alive, may make sense to take a little bit of a flyer on him at the running back position. A game between two familiar foes, Philadelphia heads to the nation's capital to take on Washington. You've seen some money coming on the dog, pushing closer to 7. There are still some 8s out there at recreational books. Total in this game, 50.5. And it leads into one of the questions that we'll get to, talking about teams playing out the stretch, a home game, not so much to play for. Of course, Philadelphia needs to bounce back after that loss on Sunday night to Dallas.
Yeah, we've seen some small sharp money from the math guys, as they're called, on the Washington Redskins. Math guys have been enamored with the Redskins all season long. They were earlier in the year when both offensive and defensive yards per play were in the top 10. That is no longer the situation here. I know last week we liked Washington at 7 with Colt McCoy getting the start. Would have never been a play with RG3. And with RG3 right now just not able to read defenses whatsoever, taking a ton of sacks, I could not go back into bed with Washington this week with all that Philadelphia's playing for here. I think Philadelphia rebounds after pretty much a disappointing performance at home. So it's some sharp money on Washington. I will not be on that party.
Yeah, I think Washington, the final score last week, a little bit misleading as well. Clearly the big momentum play, RG3 with a chance to extend the Skins lead to 17-7. Probably would have given them the cover right before halftime. Unfortunately, wasn't the case, and things kind of went downhill as part of the Odell Beckham Jr. show. You talk about, you know, some of the math money has come in. And I would tell people, if you're listening to this podcast on Thursday and you like the favorite here, maybe lay the 7 on Philadelphia. Can't see that number getting better. And in the standalone spot Saturday afternoon, have to imagine this price would push closer to 7.5, 8, maybe even higher. And Payne, like we do, and I know it's becoming a sore spot given their recent run of performances, we'll focus on a game Sunday, obviously, in your neck of the woods. Miami, depending on where you look, a 6.5, 7-point favorite. Total in this game has taken a little bit of money under as well. Market peaked at 43.5, seeing some 42.5 and 43 out there as they play host to the Purple People Eaters.
Yeah, this is a team, obviously, that I've had a great gauge on for a long time, specifically this year. Last week, not so much. This week, again, not so much. It'll be very interesting to see what Miami team shows up. Really decimated with injuries on the defensive side of the ball. They are wearing down on the defensive line, have since the Jets game. They're playing with one fully healthy cornerback in Brent Grimes. Linebackers are banged up, and really at this stage, it seems to me that they're going to just play the string out here. Players not overly enamored with Philbin. I don't know if he's able to, you know, get them motivated. There has been some internal motivation amongst the players to finish the season out 9-7, collect the first winning season in the franchise since 2008. It'll be interesting to see if that momentum carries over. Math guide numbers here are still a little stronger. They make Miami above a 7-point favorite on this one. But the way Minnesota's playing right now, they're trying to establish the run. You'd have to think that's where they'll head. Teddy Bridgewater, homecoming back to Miami. So he will try to give it his best performance there. Defense has played great the last few weeks. Ever since really the bye week, Zimmer really got this defense turned in the right direction. For me, it's a pass, but if I could get a decent price 7, probably look towards the dog here. Some sharp money I envision coming in on the under as well, but a game right now that I'm passing completely.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and anticipating that's probably where the money will come in, on the dog and under. You look at some of the early betting splits, about 60% of the action coming in on Minnesota in this particular spot. As you talked about, the luster has kind of worn off some of the Dolphins to a certain extent. Will be interesting to see how Teddy performs, and a Minnesota team trending in the right direction as they look to build towards the future. A game that arguably has taken on the most interesting dynamic of the entire weekend, involving two teams hailing from the NFC North. Detroit on the road at Chicago. The look-ahead line had the Lions listed as a 4.5-point favorite. You saw the Lions open at 7 after the Bears' lame duck effort against the Saints. Quarterback change will call Detroit an 8-point favorite right now. Total in this one, 44.5. A little bit unusual when you consider the Lions 5-17-1 against the number the last 23 games as road favorites. Of course, they don't get to play against Jimmy Clausen each time they go on the highway.
Where does this line end? That's the question. You're looking at a market right now with Chris, extremely sharp, out to as high as 9. I'm going to envision some sharp money coming in on Chicago if this gets to 10. Maybe even a little shorter than that. You're talking about a significant move here. But it's even more significant when you talk about crossing that key number of 7. And when you have a guy like Jay Cutler, who looks like, you know, he'd rather be sitting on his couch watching reruns of Laguna Beach with his wife, I think this is
which
actually
is a good which is a good show, by the way. And you can make the case that that would be much more entertaining for him than trying to throw with that offensive line, keeping him upright.
I think this is kind of an upgrade. I'd rather have Clausen getting 9 points than I would, you know, Jay Cutler getting 6.5 here. I really would. And we've seen this kind of a last-ditch effort in terms of trying to keep jobs. If they can get Clausen to perform, you know, at least average here in this spot, similar to you know, what we saw with McCown last year, maybe it saves some jobs, and they're able to just point the finger and say, hey, this is Jay Cutler's undoing, unraveling of this team. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Clausen, though, is a slight upgrade in terms of wanting to be out there, wanting to play, and especially at this number as it's crossed the key number. So I'd be interested in Chicago here. Let this get as high as humanly possible.
Yeah, I have to imagine we may see a little bit of fight as well from this Bears defense. My personal inclination would be to look towards a 45 and maybe go under, or even a first half angle. The Bears defense, while dreadful, Detroit has been anything but explosive when you talk about their performances on the highway. So might be an angle for me. You figure the Bears will try and establish the run game and pound Matt Forte a lot more than letting Clausen throw it all over the yard. And while offense could be at a premium potentially in that game, it doesn't look to be the case in this one that'll decide the NFC South between Atlanta and New Orleans. You're looking at the Saints, a 6-point favorite at home with a total of 56. New Orleans now controls their own destiny, a chance to get to the playoffs and maybe lock up the division with a win over Atlanta this weekend.
We talk about this all the time, buy one week, sell the next, and we were pretty decent on New Orleans on Monday night. Now short week, traveling back home. It'll be interesting to see Atlanta. All three of their dynamic receivers were not at practice today. I'd envision at least two of the three going here. This got as high as 6.5. We did see some resistance, a number grab potentially buying to that key number of 7 and even grabbing those 6.5s from professionals on Atlanta. I think that will be the side come game day. Quite the move here. So I kind of want to monitor this a little bit, see where it goes, but I think the professional side will be Atlanta come Sunday.
Yeah, some interesting numbers, too, when you talk about the Falcons. 0-11 straight up their last 11 games. They've been listed as a road underdog. They've gone 3-8 against the number during that stretch. 1-7-1 against the spread the past 9 divisional road games. You have to imagine this is Mike Smith's last stand. Even if this team gets to the playoffs, you can make the case that he won't be back as their head coach. And I think you look at New Orleans, as you mentioned, you know, buy low on New Orleans on the road these days seems to be the appropriate approach, and sell high with them at home, where they've struggled the last 4, losing 4 straight. And failing to cover, obviously, in that 4-game stretch after going 11-0, 9-1-1 against the spread in their previous 11 in the Dome. And from the NFC's most compelling game to maybe one in the AFC, Kansas City on the road at Pittsburgh. We've seen money on the Chiefs from 3.5 down to a soft 3. We're currently looking. Total in this game, 45.5. Should be real interesting, as one of these teams will probably be eliminated from the AFC playoff picture after this game in Heinz Field.
Yeah, I mean, we'll try to make this easy as possible. This open 3.5, wise guys race to grab the hook. I don't envision 3 lasting much longer. We have seen one book dip below that key number. It is what it is. I think this will likely be the largest professional side of the weekend. It'll be interesting to see if the public can kind of keep this number at bay. There's going to be public support, as there is most week, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. If there wasn't that love from the public, would not be shocked to see this go to as something as low as a pick. I don't believe it gets there with the public sentiment for Pittsburgh, but I believe Kansas City is one of the better sides this week.
And an interesting trend to keep in mind, too, when you talk about the way Pittsburgh chooses to move the football. Kansas City, the only team in the NFL that's yet to allow a 300-yard passer. If they can force Big Ben to lean on Le'Veon Bell, I think it plays right into Andy Reid's hands. And you mentioned Kansas City actually plays better football from a point spread perspective when they take their show on the road than what we've seen at Arrowhead. An interesting game, I think, from a question standpoint, of course, we'll get to in greater detail, Payne, as well, about teams kind of playing out the stretch at home. You have Buffalo trying to carry through some of that momentum from upsetting Green Bay last week, going across the country laying 5.5 against the Oakland Raiders. Total in this game sits at 39. The one constant with the Raiders, we've seen them play a good game, bad game, good game, then bad game. With some interesting comments coming out of Oakland, support for Tony Sperano potentially being their coach at the start of next season.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this again. Sperano's been a guy down here in Miami. Players absolutely love him. He is the rah-rah guy. Not great X's and O's, but he gets his guys to show up. And we've seen this Oakland Raiders team win their last 2 games at home as dogs. This is about as bad a situation as you can find for Buffalo, and I think the markets kind of overreact a little bit. Buffalo coming off their biggest win of the season. That game early on, could have been a downfall for Buffalo. Fortunately, the defense stuck it out. They get a special teams momentum score, but I think they could have lost touch early as slowly as Buffalo did start, especially on offense. But here you're traveling across the country. Now, I know this is like a playoff game for them, but you're getting out of Buffalo in December and you're heading to California. Quite the vacation here late in the season. And I think Oakland at 6 here makes a ton of sense. I really do.
You might actually be the first person known to mankind to call heading to Oakland any time of the year a vacation, but I guess when you're from Western New York and that's where you're spending your time during the winter, anything would appear to be an upgrade. And so you talk about those two teams, should definitely be a fascinating game. Really believe we'll also see money from the professionals coming in on this total under 39.5, 39, I envision will disappear. Really see this number closing in the 38 range. From that game to probably the most marquee game of the entire Sunday afternoon slate, Dallas, a 3-point home favorite against Indy. You're looking at a total here, 55.5 on the open, some spots 55. Of course, the big news, DeMarco Murray, how healthy he'll be, what he means to the power number. How do you begin to go about handicapping a game that obviously means a lot more to Dallas and their playoff hopes than Indy, who clinched the AFC South just a week ago?
Yeah, we talked about this one on Monday, and my stance really doesn't change. You get Indianapolis, won their division, now they're traveling to a non-conference foe. I'm not running to bet Indianapolis here. We've seen some numbers dip below the 3, some question marks with Murray. To me, I would wait to see if he's out. I think as good as he, nothing taking away from him, The offensive line is an absolute monster. You or I could probably run behind it. Joseph Randall in small stints has been very good as well. Dunbar healthier the last few weeks. So for me, it would be a waiting game on both the total and the side here. And I would much rather have, from a value perspective, and I know it won't sound to the recreational better like this makes sense, but for me, I would absolutely like Murray to not play in this game, see some overreaction in the market, both side and total for Dallas, and then I would probably have some interest in laying something below the three here and going over the total if we get under that key number of 55.
I couldn't agree more with you. You talk about Dallas and interchangeable parts in the backfield. I'd rather have a healthy running back who I knew I could trust with ball security more so than DeMarco Murray, who you're not quite sure how he's going to respond to actual contact. You've seen former players throughout the course of the week talk about how difficult it is, especially for a guy that needs to keep that ball tight to his body. It's not like he's playing the defensive line where they can wrap that thing up like a mummy and use it as a club. And you talk about running to the window. Well, go ahead, Payne. I didn't mean to cut you off, my friend.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is a guy that's had fumbling issues most of the season. I've actually seen some of the prototype pads that they were going to put on his hand, and it almost looks like a boxing glove, so to speak. So I really can't envision him going in this game. Maybe he tries to give it a go, but I'm hoping that he gets announced out, market overreacts both side and total, and then potentially there's some value in going over and laying it with the home favorite.
Well, it's funny you talk about the market overreacting, because the Sunday nighter may be the prime example of that. Seattle, a 7.5-point road favorite at Arizona, a chance to put a stranglehold on the division. Of course, Arizona going with Ryan Lindley under center. You've seen the lowest total of the entire NFL season here, 37 in the open, down to 36.5. I'm not even sure how you go about trying to handicap this game with potential defensive touchdowns looming, not only for Arizona, but on both sides, knowing that both these units can be relatively stout. But can you quite possibly make the case for the home underdog here in a little bit of uncharted territory with an 11-win team catching over a touchdown in their own building?
This is really one of the toughest games for me to gauge right now. It really is. When you look at this number, Arizona's had some success against the Seattle team, obviously went up to Seattle, beat them with the 12th man in their corner. Lindley scares me a little bit, and as inflated as this line is, you get a home dog with a total of 36.5 or 37, it would be very appealing to a lot of sharp guys. But with Lindley back there, a defensive score for Seattle can just balloon this game right out. Like I said, there was a rush to bet this total under on Sunday night, and you rarely see that, especially when you talk about this Sunday, you know, standalone primetime stamp. 40.5s were gobbled immediately. I don't believe under still the side here. Maybe if you wanted to go under, you're now looking at going first half. You need the hook there at 17.5 to even consider going under, in my opinion. But math guys made this number, Arizona, as about a 5.5, 6-point dog here. I'm not running to take the 7.5, 8. Not a lot of interest for me right now in this game.
I'd have to echo those same sentiments. I do think it's one of the harder games to handicap of the entire weekend. And the luxury we have as bettors is we don't have to have a strong opinion on every single game, and this would definitely fall into that class. Folks, new to the podcast, hoping to hear the Denver-Cincinnati breakdown for the marquee matchup on Monday. Well, you folks are just going to have to come back and listen to the Monday edition of the Bet the Board podcast. And Payne, as we always do, before we switch gears to questions, we'll kind of reset it for everybody. Those folks tuning in, the man on the other end of the line, he of PainInsider.com fame. You can check out his great work there or follow him on Twitter at PainInsider and follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. And again, the hashtag portion at using AskBetTheBoard, some great information that we try and make readily available. Don't want to paraphrase or butcher, but that's what I'm going to do with these two particular questions. They kind of mirrored one another. One comes in from Paul Craddock, uses the Twitter handle at PTCraddock. And one from Fabian H, who goes by at Fabian_H_. More or less questions about motivation affecting power numbers late in the year for teams on the outside looking into the playoff race and teams playing out the stretch at home in front of their loyal fans.
Yeah, I mean, lots of generalizations when it comes to sports betting. And for me, I kind of like to break it down and focus on each game individually. I think there is overreaction in the marketplace to the quote-unquote must-win game. And for me, I'm going to try to make a case for teams with motivation that potentially have nothing to play for. A team we'll talk about later, we've seen the Tennessee Titans. they dislike their coach, so they haven't been playing for him the last few weeks. On the reverse, we talked about this game earlier, Buffalo-Oakland. Buffalo has everything in the world to play for. We're going to get a little inflated number because of that, because of the result last week, and everything pointing to the quote that you pulled up earlier with guys wanting to play for Tony Sperano probably lends Oakland to being a very good example on bucking the overvalued must-win situation this week.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely, like you said, you hit the nail on the head, in my opinion. Case by case, you never want to make blanket generalizations or assume that anything falls into a template that you can use week in, week out, especially with week 16 and week 17 NFL point spread. And a question that actually came in earlier this week came from Luke Isaiah, goes by the Twitter handle LKMorg14, asks, if I play an underdog against the spread, should I play them on the money line as well? If that's the case, what kind of percentage should I be using on the money line?
Absolutely. Unequivocally, yes. Both in college and the NFL, typically the greater the edge we have in the game, the larger the money line play. Usually we are in the 15% to 50% range in terms of adding the money line to the spread wager. So if you're a guy that's, you know, risking $100 on the spread, you're going to be in between that $15 to $50 range on the money line additionally. And again, based upon our edge on the game, we'll increase the money line wager accordingly. Typically, what we're looking for are those home dogs in that 3 to 10 range, especially in college. And when it comes to the pros, you're probably playing those in that 3 to 7 range. That's our core of money line plays for dogs.
And it's something I would reiterate, because I know we have bettors of all ability levels and bankrolls that listen to this podcast regularly. Make sure you do things that are comfortable, but it's definitely worth experimenting, even if it's something as small as $5 of your $25 wager. It just builds those good practices, stuff that you can use to build on moving forward, as every bettor gets his start somewhere. We all don't start betting dimes or multiple dimes on games, and especially not the six-figure bets that the professionals will typically move on an NFL Sunday.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think doing things the right way eventually lends to good habits. You kind of just build your own luck by doing things the right way. And money is relative. It really is. And I guess the betting percentage is relative, whether you're betting $100 or $5 or $25 or $25,000. Using that guideline in that 15% to 50% range, percentage is a relative term. So definitely something you should be practicing, without question.
And of course, Payne, we get to finish this podcast on a high note, making history, where the Jacksonville Jaguars will be listed as a favorite in a National Football League game that means something for the first time in 42 such appearances, coming up just one game short of the Rams, who set the NFL record for futility from that point spread perspective back in 2007 to 2009. It's called Jacksonville, a 3.5-point favorite. We have seen major money coming on the under, 41 on the open, down to 38.5. And folks, if you're using players on either one of these rosters tonight with fantasy implications, I wish you good health. But at the same time, Payne, there's got to be a betting angle we can try and explore between these two flyweights going head-to-head down there in North Florida.
This might be the breakout performance Toby Gerhardt owners have been waiting for all season long, Todd. This could be the spot.
I believe someone who shall remain nameless on this pod was in my ear throughout the month of August calling Toby Gerhardt his breakout player and a potential fantasy sleeper to win championships much earlier this season.
Hey, he might be a nice waiver wire acquisition this week. Might be. When it comes to this game, we have seen an early move here on Jacksonville. Obviously, the public is on the Jacksonville side as well. Depending on where this goes, it'll be interesting to see if there is some resistance from the professionals on Tennessee. Obviously, this math number, and when you factor in Jacksonville's home field advantage, 3.5 and 4 is extremely stiff for a number. The math number here is Jacksonville minus 1.5, so this is a very, very stiff number. I kind of alluded to on the podcast last Monday, I know that there's professional money on this under. I really do, but when you talk about this game, neither with anything to play for, young talent all over the field for Jacksonville, Wisenhunt, an offensive mind, you would think that this game would open up a bit, You know, the division rivalry or the division game on a short week, I think kind of gets thrown out the window here. Bortles, prone to making mistakes, you get a few of those in his own end, create some short fields. Whitehurst at quarterback for Tennessee, I think he's the most capable of the potential three quarterbacks that we're going to be trotted out for this game. I'm not running to bet it at this number. If this gets down even further in that 38 range, I'd consider going over for a small position. I really would. Just on the merits of neither team really playing for anything on national TV, why not open this up? Why not take some chances? And that's kind of my mindset with this one.
I would actually echo those same sentiments. I think the number from 41 to 38 would be overcompensation. As we saw late in the year last year with the Jacksonville Jaguars, they did open up a game plan against, I believe, the Houston Texans, if memory serves me correct, in a game that went flying over the total despite some money that came in from the pros on the under. And I think that may make the most sense. Of course, the luxury, as we mentioned earlier, you don't necessarily have to bet the game if you don't have a ton of confidence. And for me, as it stands right now, Payne, no position taken on this particular contest.
Yeah, me either. I would be interested to see how low this total goes and maybe entertain, you know, something very small with going over if I can get the right number, a value bet, so to speak. If I can get, 38 on this game. But other than that, not much interest in this one for me at all. I don't even know if I'll be watching it.
Amazing to think that by the time we reconvene on Monday, all we'll have left is a single solitary game in NFL Week 16, and we'll be talking about the final week of the regular season where there are all sorts of unique betting opportunities, good, bad, or indifferent. Any parting shots, Payne, to give our fine listeners a little bit of wisdom before they walk to the window on Sunday?
No, I think we've really talked about the sides. I think, Kansas City probably a home run at this point, grab the threes before they're gone.
You'll probably
look at Chicago, let that get as high as humanly possible, and maybe the Oakland Raiders as well.
I was going to say, Kansas City makes a ton of sense. I think the ship has sailed to a certain extent on the Chargers, but Oakland, maybe that sleeper dog and a perfect opportunity to try out the new bankroll strategy that Payne has shared with you on the podcast today. So for Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. Visit his website, PayneInsider.com. I'm Todd Furman. Follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman or visit my website, ToddsTake.com. Hopefully, come Sunday afternoon, we'll see you at the window.